Pew, 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 pew. Yo, 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 welcome back to the Snatch Edges podcast. I'm Ebony Ajedwa, your host, your friendly neighborhood trichologist, giving you, you know, all of the info on like Afro hair and how to maintain it, how to make it look sick, you know, really enjoy it and let it live its best life. So lockdown's been super productive for me, and I mean, you guys are getting another podcast quicker than I think I've ever done before, so that's amazing. As always, if you enjoy it, please do share, comment, like, subscribe, you know, be on my case, and I'll try and bang these out a little bit faster, especially if there's any topics you want me to cover or people you want me to interview. And do share it with your friends and family who may find it useful. Also, every Sunday, I've been hosting a virtual wash day where I get my fix of talking about natural hair. I get to see some of your lovely faces, and I really do hope you will join me while we're all stuck at home trying to manage, you know, what's going on with COVID-19 and all of that stuff. So yeah, the link is below. Please do click and sign up. It is free, and I would love to see you there. Now, for today's episode, I'm joined by an amazing woman who really came into her own through her journey with her natural hair and for her child. Now, we touched on so many topics, so I know that you may have to listen to this in doses, but there are so many quotables, so I really hope you will enjoy it. Anyways, let's get into it now. Take care.
My name is Titilola Mibelo. I offer hair health and length courses to those who have natural hair only, people that might want to grow their hair to great length or to manage and grow their children's hair as well.
Cool. And so how did you get started in this field?
My daughter, really. So about 5-6 years ago, I started realizing that my hair was incredibly damaged. I've had natural hair for the last 20-something years. Before I even started university, I cut my hair off, went to university natural, stayed natural for the entire time, got married, had kids, still natural. But as the years went on, I realized that although I was natural and really believed in the beauty of natural hair, I really didn't know how to take care of my natural hair. And so from seeing it really flourish, and you know, everyone knew me with my natural hair, and all of a sudden it started deteriorating really, really badly, and I didn't pick up on it at first, and that's probably because there was an explosion in Brazilian hair, Peruvian hair, and I started wearing weaves. And although weaves were not really the issue, the way that I was using it was the issue. Now I was using it back to back, and if I wasn't in weaves back to back, I was in braids back to back. All of those things led to serious hair thinning for me, and my edges got really, really damaged.
Yeah.
And obviously, all throughout that time, I'd had my daughter, started raising my daughter. It was fine, competent with doing cornrows. I was never going to relax her hair anyway. But she then started seeing my weaves and my braids and started asking from a very, very young age, really, at what age she would be allowed to have her first weave.
Oh, wow. How did that make you feel when she was saying that?
I was in denial. I won't lie. I was in denial for a while. So at first I thought, you know, obviously she sees me with it.
Yeah.
She wants it. And I told myself little lies that, well, I have natural hair and she sees that once in a while. So, you know, it doesn't matter. I am in the category of people that don't use chemicals.
Okay. So you thought you was kind of like in the hierarchy, like, well, I don't use chemicals, so I'm okay with like what I'm doing.
Of course, you know, I don't use chemicals, and once in a while I wear my hair and rock my hair out, and so therefore that's the visual.
That's the representation that she needs.
That's right. But you know, and this has been a really difficult journey for me. And so for those who may be struggling, I kind of really want them to understand that I've been through it.
Yeah.
So not only was I was in denial, and I told myself those things, which were, you know, half truths, but they were not the complete truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because the complete truth was every time that I wanted to go out to somewhere special, I wore a weave or had something else other than my hair.
Yeah.
And so what she was learning, what I was teaching her, was essentially that everything else is better and more appropriate. And you know, you grab for what is something else when you want to go out. And I'm a social person. I used to, not so much these days, but I used to go out quite a bit. So she saw me with everything but my hair on special occasion. Mm-hmm. My wedding picture was with a weave, even though, to be fair, I did want to have my natural hair, and everyone around me convinced me that that wasn't a good idea.
Oh, that's not nice.
And I regret it to today, but we are talking about 16 years ago. At some point, I really had to be honest with myself, mm-hmm. and say that the reason that my daughter constantly was asking about weaves was because that's what she saw me in most of the time.
And what do you think was the big turning point for you? Where did you realize, okay, maybe this isn't, like, not say the best, but what made you want to change it and really give your natural hair a go so that it was more of a viable option in your daughter's eyes?
Exactly 5 years ago, and I know exactly the day, it was Halloween.
Okay.
I was going out and I had tried to put my hair in a twister and it wouldn't curl because it was heat damaged. And it was thin. And no matter how much I fluffed it, it wasn't big. It was flat and it was thin and I had no edges.
Mm.
I would never forget that day. I would never forget how I felt because I knew my hair used to be amazing.
Yeah.
I had destroyed it myself. That was a turning point. It took me about 4 months after that to then, you know, actually sit up and start
do something about it. Yeah,
exactly. But that was the turning point.
Wow. So can I just quickly ask, so when you say that you're doing your hair for Halloween, were you going out or was it fancy?
I was going out. I was going to Novikov with my friend.
Oh, very fancy.
Yes. And it was a disaster. And I it's so funny because I always remember this outing, and this particular friend, she never minces her words. You know, for a while she'd been saying, your hair used to be longer than this.
Oh.
You know, so it was clear that my hair had deteriorated.
But you just couldn't take it in yet.
I just wasn't prepared to confront what I had done. No. But eventually I did, and then I turned it around. And I turned it around by completely stripping back on what I used to do to my hair by mm-hmm. really adopting a very, very simple regimen. I made sure, because, I mean, this is from my nutrition and fitness background, I'm a huge believer in accountability. So I made sure that I went to see a hair coach to keep me accountable and keep me on track and on my word that I was about to change my hair around, because I knew exactly why my hair was damaged. I knew what I'd been doing. I just needed to kind of face up to it and address it. And fast forward 4 years later, my hair has improved, probably the best it's ever looked. I think in terms of what drove me to share my knowledge with other people, it wasn't even so much as what I could do in terms of impacting the knowledge to help them. Mm-hmm. It was more about the children. It was more, what got me more throughout this process was that some way I had told my daughter unconsciously and through actions, not words, that other was better than natural,
her own, yeah, natural,
than our own. And it took a lot of work to kind of change that, but we did. And that's what has led me, because the bottom line, I have never met a little girl that doesn't want long hair. I've met, I'll turn that around. I've met one little girl that didn't want long hair, at all. And I told her, Mom, just cut her hair.
Yeah.
But this is only one. Most of the little girls that I've come across, most of the people that are on my course for their children, their daughters want long hair. This idea that we also have in the community that so somehow it's our little girls that don't want long hair is bizarre to me.
Yeah, I've never really crossed that before. Yeah, I do see the wanting long hair. But then I think, I don't know, for me, wanting long hair was looking at the girls around me who were mostly white and had really long hair, they're just like, why doesn't my hair look like theirs?
Yes. And so there are two things. They can have long hair if, you know, mum or dad is prepared to kind of, you know, just learn, strip back, invest in that length. But it's never going to be the kind of long hair that Emma has.
Yeah. You
know, it's going to be different. It's always going to be different. Most of the time, I also have to educate my daughter. It's going to hide its length, you know. So you're never going to be able to kind of have that swingy hair every day, day in, day out. But, you know, we've gone through all of that. And now she knows, you know, her hair is just as long as her friend's hair, even though it might not appear to be. But whenever she has a special occasion and she wants the length to show, we'll do a blow dry, we'll do something else. You know, there's something powerful in knowing that you can have what, you know, everyone else has. It might be different, it might show up differently, but I guess for me, I just don't, the idea that we can completely ignore the fact that little girls like long hair, they want long hair. I have a issue with that's, and that's not, and I know that sometimes that's a conflict between them getting completely obsessed with longer length and doing, you know, because that is an issue as well. But that's not what I'm talking about. I think we need to, especially our little girls, we need to care for their hair. We need to make sure that they understand that their hair is just as beautiful, just as, you know, amazing. It can be long, it can be short, it can be whatever they want, but the care needs to be given. And the first thing, I mean, our children shouldn't be asking at 4 or 5 when at what age they would be allowed to wear their first weave. That's
true. No, it's true. I feel like it, I'm hoping that, like, you know, mothers and women listening to this don't feel attacked or embarrassed, because it's something that is a lot of a bigger issue than just, you know, like our hair is so tied up in our identity and how we've grown up, especially like those that grew up over here and like in more white dominant cultures, that we've had a big kind of like push and pull with how we see ourselves. And so it does take a lot of unlearning to understand that our hair is beautiful in its own right and that it can do the things that we, you know, never imagined for it. Just that, like, you and your daughter and girls with long hair aren't the unicorns. You could be the norm.
Exactly.
So usually people will see someone with long hair and be like, oh, it's just them, you know, it's their family, they're drinking water.
Exactly.
That's so unattainable. But hopefully through this this conversation and through people learning more about yourself, you can understand, you know, it doesn't have to be difficult at all. It just takes really, really simple but intentional steps to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is, you know, you've been a lot more succinct than I have been, but you've hit the nail on the head. And don't get me wrong, I said in the beginning that, you know, look, when I started to take, it's been a journey, and the journey changes for me, you know, as I went along. So I first started by reducing the weave, taking, you know, great care of my hair, reducing the braids and so on and so forth. And then maybe 2 years in, I challenged myself to wear my own hair exclusively for a while. Mm-hmm. That's still one of the most difficult things I've ever done till date. You know, and it goes back to what you said, that, you know, even changing our hair frequently, it's part of our culture, changing things up, you know, not looking bored. I had to deal with a very, very boring, simple look, and just looking at myself in the mirror, being with myself and being okay with that's another type of journey. So it is a journey, but you said it so perfectly in that, you know, my daughter is not, you know, she's not an anomaly. This is not a genetic, her hair doesn't even grow 1/2 inch a month. That's the honest truth.
Wow. So she's got slower growth rate than the average and still is able to maintain, you know, quite a long length. That's really encouraging to hear. Because some people are just like, my hair, this one you're saying 1/2 inch a month, mine is 1/2 inch a year. And I'm like, okay, but it's still holding on to whatever you're growing.
Exactly. Exactly. So she is, and it's so funny because I showed her a picture, two pictures of two of the ladies on my hair course. And she was like, I can't believe the hair is this long already. They're not even 4 yet. You know, I could see a tinge. I could see a tinge of jealousy.
Yeah.
Because she was also, she's believing, well, there must be a part of her that was believing that she was unique. She's not unique. absolutely not unique in being able to grow and retain length. And I think, you know, you said it so brilliantly, and that's the message that I want moms to understand. And there's something.
Go on, sorry.
There's something powerful. This is the thing. It's not just hair. There's something very, very powerful in your child believing that there are enough as they are, without any addition, without any attachment flowing down their back, that, you know, just with their hair, they're enough.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I think sometimes we're kind of like, we see like the after pictures, I guess, but we don't see the journey. And you're saying this took you, like, this was like a 5 years of discovery. And I'm sure in those first few years or in the beginning months, it was, there was times where it's just like, ah, it's better for me to just quickly put my hair in braids, or what am I going to do? Or even just like input from other people. I'm sure if they were able to see, you know, on a month by month what it was like, they would have a deeper appreciation that it's not just, you know, hair that you tackled. It was a really holistic kind of view and change.
It's again, you've hit it on the head. It bothers me that people think, you know, nowadays, you know, they're going to get a transformation in 3 months, even 6 months. You know, I didn't really see a substantial change in the physicality of my hair until about month 7, because my hair was that damaged.
Yeah.
You know, but that didn't stop me from consistently, you know, washing my hair every week, consistently deep conditioning it, consistently staying away from the styles that, you know, that I knew caused the damage, you know. But nowadays everyone wants a huge transformation before and after, you know. There's, I've got a blog post up when I showed pictures of the ugly phase. My ugly phase, you know. But that is, and you know, my husband jokingly said to me the other day, he said, I hope you've showed people, you know, when your hair, he said it was chopped.
When it was chopped.
Well, all the front was like, you know, he said, I hope you showed. I said, yeah, I've showed people that picture, but still they get seduced more by the after.
Yeah, you know? I find that bit really hard as well, because I guess for me, like, I think I'm that one out of 100 that doesn't really care about long hair or anything. And at the moment, I'm trying to go locked. So I'm going through the, I want to say awkward phase, or the teenage phase, where my locks look frizzier, you know, not defined. And so it's really hard to be like, oh yeah, I'm a hair professional, but you know, my hair doesn't look, I guess, physically appealing to a lot of people. And so trying to understand, get people to understand that, like, you know, what you see on the outside is just temporary for now. Like, you haven't seen it in its final form, and you have to appreciate the whole journey before you get to the end.
Absolutely. And I always say, you know, short-term goals are great, but if you're on this journey, you're on in it for the long term.
Yeah.
You know? But even people that are signed up to my course in month one start saying, I haven't seen changes, my hair's still dry. You've been abusing your hair for the last however many years.
And you want to change in 30 days. Yeah, it's hard to comprehend.
Exactly. It's really hard to comprehend, but it's the same when you look at nutrition, when you look at fitness, and it's the same reason why people get sucked in into crazy diets. Time in and time up, because that short-term goal is much more attractive, and the before and the after are much more attractive. The only great thing with hair, though, is that you know that nobody can be showing you before and after in a year, you know, from teeny weeny afro to waist length.
I don't know. I see it online sometimes, and I'm just like,
actually, I've seen it.
People will message me and be like, okay, Ebony, told me to wait, but like, this girl did it. I'm like, listen, I don't know what she was doing, but I'm telling you, tried and tested practices over here, it will work. Just like, stick with me. But you mentioned nutrition, and that's what I want to kind of move into now, because you're not just a hair coach, you have a certification in nutrition, and that makes up a big part of how you teach people. So give me a little bit of information on that.
So nutrition has always been in my life, and it started from a point of vanity. Now, I wouldn't even lie. In my 20s, I never used to read magazines in my teens, but in my 20s, I started reading magazines, and I started looking at celebrities, and I started wondering how come they were aging, but their bodies were not really aging the way that I was seeing the bodies around me age. Mm-hmm. And that led into an interest in nutrition, that led into an interest in training. And so I've always had an interest all throughout university, you know, I had kids. I knew that I wanted to kind of stay in shape. And then I started, I had kids. I think this is a good point. I had kids. Yeah. And I lost a lot of body muscle mass. So a lot of people will have kids and they will notice that even though they lose weight, their bodies don't look the same.
Okay.
The muscle tone has gone. So they're looking less defined. They're looking, they call it the soft look.
Yeah.
And so that happened to me in my second pregnancy. And I wondered, you know, what could I do? And I sought the help of a personal trainer.
And so how can you point out, I love that when you have a need, you go and seek out a professional, because that's what a lot of people, I guess, miss on their journey sometimes and really struggle with, is that you said that, you know, I had problems in my hair, I went to a hair coach, I had problems in my nutrition and my fitness, I went to a personal trainer. It's important to seek out people with expertise that can guide you along and prevent you from wasting time and money and really talk to you about your individual needs. Continue. I just had to just drop that in there.
But it's consistent throughout. You're absolutely right. Not only did I go to a personal trainer, then down the line, I also went to a nutritionist to help me specifically with my, and I do it. And it's a practice of, it's a philosophy and principle that I just believe in because I still do it to today.
Yeah.
So I constantly refer people on to other people that might be best suited to help. Because you only know what you know.
Exactly.
And this is the thing. If in the hair community, if our focus is on the people that are coming to us for help, if that's the need that we really want to meet, then we have to work with other people.
Sorry, I'm going to make that the little snippet because I feel like that's the word that everybody needs to get from this. Like, it's so about collaboration. I don't know why sometimes we're like, this is my person. I can't share them with anyone. I'm like, no, we're doing the person a disservice if we don't give them everything that they need if that comes outside of us.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy to me, but anyway. So it's a philosophy that I continue with till today. So I sought help with my training. And you know, Gavin said to me, it's not how you're training, it's how you're eating.
Mm.
I promise you, I was eating really healthily. I can tell you that for nothing. But the problem is when you're trying to build muscle, it's completely different to trying to lose weight. And I tell people, you know, if you're trying to lose weight, completely different discipline. Trying to build muscle, completely different discipline. Trying to eat healthy is easier, general, you know, no issue. So I sought help, I got help, I changed my body, I then did a bodybuilding competition.
No, don't say that part slowly. You have to make that a bit loud and let people know that you was out here professionally bodybuilding, showing everyone else up with all of your muscles in different places that none of us even knew there was muscle before.
yeah. And that was that was one of the most difficult challenges I've ever done in my life, the bodybuilding. Not just the physicality of training 6 days a week, sometimes twice a day, that I enjoy. What was really difficult is honing in on your nutrition. Your nutrition has to be on point, calculated, and it gave me a real interest in actually, I couldn't believe how you could completely change the human form by just changing your diet. Not just inside, but you can physically change how someone looks by just changing their diet. So I had to, after that, take a course in nutrition, and I got my certification in nutrition. And it's something that I now bring into my hair course because it's so important. It's important for hair, it's important for skin, it's important for well-being, it's important for your sleep. It's important even if you train, how you train, how you move, how you function. And I guess this holistic approach, I'm beginning to see more and more people talk about nutrition in hair, and it's great, it's amazing. And I guess this is where things are needed. I know, you know, trichologists like yourself always talk about also, you know, it's not just what you're putting on your hair, it's also what you're eating. So in my course at the moment, the course started in April, I'm going to have a chat. I don't talk about nutrition in the first month. I talk about it in the second month, mm-hmm. but I can see one or two people on the course on diets that are not in line with my thinking. And I've got to be careful because, look, there are various approaches to how people can eat, and very successful approach. And I'm always very, very keen to say and to highlight that there's no one civilization that's always eating the same
the best,
thing.
Yeah.
I don't believe that the Western diet is the best for everyone. I don't believe you need to eat broccoli every day or green beans every day. You know, I believe in eating, personally, I believe in eating things that were close to your own cultural background. Mm-hmm. So I believe in things like yam, plantains, beans, you know, food that, you know, it's just, I believe in cooking them completely differently to how I see people cook them. But in saying that, I certainly am against any form of diet that eliminates certain food groups from.
Oh, I feel like certain people are going to get triggered now. Okay, let's just lay it on the table.
People are going to get triggered because they're going to get triggered because I'm going to say, if hair care is the core, and I'm always very, very mindful. Mm-hmm. To tell people on the course that, you know, I'm not here to teach you how to lose weight. I'm not here to teach you how to build muscle. I'm here to teach you how to eat properly for optimal hair health.
Right.
So if optimal hair health is the goal, then you have to be eating a balanced diet.
And I know that I know you, but I got nervous for a second because... I think some people are very, like, you know, pen and paper ready, like, okay, so what food exactly do I need to eat to grow my hair? And said balance, like, just, I don't know why I was shocked for a second, but I was just like, no, it makes sense because, like, this week I've been doing a lot of lives and talking to people, and people have been asking me, like, you know, again, like, what topically can I put on my hair? So, like, the rise of DIYs at home, of, like, putting, mixing, like, mayonnaise, eggs, avocado, honey, you know, all that stuff. I'm like, yeah. If you're not eating correctly, all of that is, you're just wasting it. Like, why would you not put that fuel inside your body and expect it to do something rather than put it on literally dead cells and expect it to revive it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So for me, the key and the core is eating a balanced diet. And a balanced diet does not involve removing any one macronutrient. And by that, yeah. I mean, it doesn't involve removing carbohydrates, it doesn't involve removing protein, it includes everything properly. So that's your complex carbohydrate, that's your protein, that's your micronutrients, which includes your fruits and your vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem is a lot of people don't know how to eat a balanced diet. We've almost lost the skill. Instead, we go for the, you know, the sexy and the whizzy diets of keto. And I don't mean, I'm not going to slag off keto diet for those yeah. who are lovers of that diet. The only thing that I would say about such diets is you then need to be extra mindful of making sure that the nutrients that you're missing when you cut out other food groups is included in your diet. And that yeah. might be through supplementation. But to jump into those diets without giving due consideration to how they might have an impact on the nutrients and the, you know, the vitamins, the minerals that you'll be taking in.
I feel like it's really important because regardless, like, we put hair health aside, but like when you embark on any diet, you need to make sure that it's fueling your body. That's the whole point of eating, to make sure that your body's getting the nutrients that it needs. So if you are going to make any changes to that, you need to make sure that, like, you know, as you said, if there's any gaps in, like, if you're removing protein or fats or carbs, that your body's still getting all of the nutrients. And that's what I think sometimes people lack, and then they don't understand that there's side effects, sometimes serious, that can occur when very they embark on certain diets or exclusion diets, rather.
Very, very serious. Very, very, very serious side effects. And I'm always amazed. And I always say, well, you didn't even think that there could be any effect at all, or you didn't even sit to think, okay, this is what this diet is asking me to do, and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to kind of mitigate against whatever I'm going to be losing. So for example, if you do a hashtag on Instagram, for example, mm-hmm. and you type keto hair loss, you will see so many pictures.
Yeah.
So many, and so it baffles me that people would say that they want to grow their hair. And then they will go on keto, but they will not then do the research and then mitigate against this very, very common problem that we continue to see with people that are on a keto diet, which is this hair loss issue. I'm not just as with vegans, I'm not saying you can't go on a vegan diet and not be healthy. I'm not saying you can't go on a keto diet and not be healthy. I'm simply saying if you do choose those two diets to go on, there's going to be gaps.
Yeah.
But you can fill the gaps. And by filling the gaps, all you need to do is sit down and be intentional. Intentional about where you're going to get, if you're vegan, where you're going to get your B vitamins from, how you're going to supplement with your protein. And if you're on a keto, make sure, for example, that your protein intake isn't so low and that the micronutrients that you're missing from not having things like fruits and certain vegetables, that you're getting something from somewhere else.
Exactly.
And that is simply the message. But to imagine that there isn't going to be any impact on your health, or to think that the outcome of weight loss alone is, you know, good. Well, I guess for some people it's a choice. If weight loss alone is the
goal, outcome, yeah,
then fair enough. But if you lose all the weight and lose all your hair along the lines, I don't think you'd be too happy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people need to understand that with any significant change to your diet, whether it's positive or negative for your body, you still can experience some form like of hair loss. So whether it's temporary, like a telogen effluvium, which would be like increased shedding. Sometimes, as you said, like, you know, the change in the mineral content and vitamin content of your body can make those significantly more serious. Like it can lead to other things where like the hair isn't able like to create, because I think people don't understand that their hair is a reflection of their internal health. And so sometimes your hair falling is a sign that actually something's happening. It's not quite right at the moment. And you need to kind of check. And usually it can be like, you know, vitamin and nutrient deficiencies in completely healthy people. Like a lot of women will suffer with iron deficiency just because they have heavy periods. And it's like making sure that, okay, am I supplementing myself with iron then to increase my hair? And that, the results of like, you know, taking iron is not going to be a quick fix. It will take several months for your hair to then improve, and it's improving from the roots downwards. Do you know what I mean? Like the new growth will be better, not that the ends of your hair will see significant change.
Absolutely. And I'm really, really pleased that you mentioned iron, because I think honestly that is one that I see more frequently than any other one. And I say I see because when people sign up, the first thing that they get, the first email they get from me says, go to your doctors and check.
Oh, hallelujah. Yes. I love that you send people to their GP and have a blood test straight away. It's so important.
Oh, yeah. They get an email and they're told, go and get your work, your blood work done. And I'm really sorry to admit that sometimes some GPs can be a bit.
No, they are. I will take that. Yeah.
They can push back sometimes. And when they do push back, I just say, tell them you're feeling really tired.
Yeah, me too. I have a whole speech I give to my clients. I'm like, listen, I'm going to put this down. And if they say no, just be like, listen, I'm feeling really tired. My skin is, I just start and ahhing, because it's like, I know it's horrible. Sometimes you have to twang the system a little bit. And like,
no.
In my own experience where I've been feeling really ill and I had doctors push back. And this is no way to shame doctors, because I work with a lot of them. They're under so much pressure that it's pressure pushed down on them, and they have to, you know, kind of be the bearer, but they have to be the bad cop. But you have to try and work around, especially as Black women, we're not believed about our issues. So
exactly,
can reveal so much. And so many things are skipped over, but when they see in their blood, in your blood work, they have no choice but to be like, oh, actually, let me take this person serious. So please, it doesn't give them a little bit of wahala if they make you, but at least once a year, go and have your bloods taken.
Yes. So so there was a lady in my course who was absolutely diligent in, you know, the practices, stripping back all, you know, all the good protocol she was following, and she saw very little improvement in the length, and remember that she was really keen on growing her hair longer. Mm-hmm. And it went back to this iron deficiency, which unfortunately she had actually already picked up, but it just hadn't rectified itself as quickly as we would have liked it to, which goes back to what you were saying, that, you know, it takes a while sometimes for a deficiency like an iron deficiency to kind of rectify itself with proper prescription. And I'm going to stick with iron a little bit, because there are loads of reasons why people dissuaded from taking their iron tablet as prescribed. It can be upsetting to the stomach.
Yeah, it's a hard one to take.
It really, really, really is. And I say that as someone that has been anemic all my life and will probably always be a little bit on the lower side. It takes a lot to keep on top of it. But it has taken me trying different iron tablets to find one that I can tolerate to a large extent. I've never found one that's perfect, but, you know, I can tolerate one or two, to be honest with you, to a larger extent. So people should, you know, work with their doctors to find that one that they can tolerate. And sometimes it may mean that instead of taking it three times a day, if you're really, really low, you might have to do twice a day.
You have to really taper it and see how we feel, because
exactly
going from like zero to a lot, it causes so much issues, and that is like a big barrier to take people taking any medication. And I think also in our communities, people are very, I don't know, it's funny, because if you tell someone to take an iron tablet who has been prescribed, it's hard for them, but people will pick up like multivitamin and take that without any guidance, and I'm like, oh, but that doesn't make any sense.
absolutely. And so we know from in our community that we also disproportionately suffer from fibroids, which can lead to heavy periods, which means that there are even more women within our community that might be struggling with iron. And in that same community, people will willy-nilly start, you know, removing red meat from their diet for no good reason.
Yeah.
So things like that, they don't add up or stack up for me, as well as, you know, so taking iron aside, the next one I see is vitamin D. This one goes under the radar quite a bit. But more and more we're seeing, or people are...
Yeah, as you said, let me take my vitamin D tablets, because I know that's one I slack on as well. So please continue talking. I'm going to take mine, because reminder.
Yeah, this is the one that goes under the radar quite a bit. And a lot of people within our community initially maybe struggled to accept that they needed to take their vitamin D on a daily basis. And now we know that the general advice from the medical sector is that for Black people, including children, you should be taking vitamin D every day throughout the seasons. For white people, they're asked to top up in the winter months. But for Black people, you are advised to take it all year round. And people will, you know, I've been saying it for so long, but some people will start, then they will stop. So a lot of people that have struggled with vitamin D have mentioned things that are really quite concerning in terms of symptoms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, achy joints. You know, I had a lady that, you know, even struggled out after a while to even be able to type. That's how badly her joints were affected. And it's also one of those that, you know, you may be feeling tired, you may be feeling achy, and you might just put it down to something else.
Yeah.
And not realize that you're deficient. But with regards to hair health, we know that iron and vitamin D can have a substantial impact on the health of your hair if you don't keep those in check. And so those are the things, because people always ask, what vitamins should I take? What should I take?
Great question. So
I'm not a huge fan of just popping pills. Obviously, as you grow older, you might want to kind of be mindful about, you know, be more intentional about your nutritional intake. But most people, if they're eating a balanced diet and they're taking their vitamin D supplements and they're keeping an eye on their iron, as we just discussed, then we'll be absolutely fine with just maybe added a multivitamin to the mix. You don't need
so
to
do you then recommend that people go, like, I know there's several brands that sell, you know, hair vitamins and things like that. Is it something that you suggest people go down to, like, their local, you know, health store and pick up, or do you go under the guidance of a nutritionist and their GP and their blood work, or is it something that, yeah, just go pick one up, is fine?
No, I think they're all useless.
Oh, tell us more, because I have my thoughts, but I try not to, like, you know, be, I guess, an echo chamber. I like to a little bit of discourse. So tell me what you think about hair vitamins and, or vitamins in general.
Well, vitamins in general, you know for certain that the best source is through your food.
Mm.
The only reason that vitamin D is slightly different is because for Black people in particular, it is quite difficult to get everything you need from your food and the sun.
Yeah.
And we know that we live in an area in the West. So, for example, the advice would not be the same for someone that lives in Nigeria, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Is going out. There's some people in Nigeria that just move from car to AC, and then, you know, those people might need vitamin D. But, you know, if you live in sunny parts, you don't need it. You probably don't need it at all. So the only reason that we ask people to top up is because we know that in the West, 50% of the population are deficient in this vitamin.
Yeah.
So we know that it's a problem. The problem that you're trying to address with taking vitamin is if you know that there's a deficiency. So if there's no deficiency and you're taking pills for the sake of taking pills, you're not, you know, you may not be doing yourself any harm. Sometimes you can be doing yourself any harm, but you're not doing yourself any good either. So
it's just expensive pee, because most of the things are not absorbed or saved. So it's like you're not actually helping.
Exactly. So taking a hair vitamins like biotin, for example, and when you're not deficient in biotin, is not doing anything for you. In fact, it could do some harm because some people break out in spots.
Yeah.
And you also know that it messes with your blood work when you take biotin.
Yeah, if you're having, like, any heart problems or anything like that, biotin's a real big no-no. And it's like, I've never come across anyone who's biotin deficient. It does occur, but it's very, very rare. Sometimes a well-balanced hair vitamin and a supplement that's given in special cases will contain biotin, but it's only as, like, you know, part of a complex, not absolutely. That the person is deficient. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Taking it by itself is really, really, really pointless.
It's pointless, it's ridiculous, but it's marketed so well and people really believe it. You know, and I've had one pushback saying, you know, did somebody know someone who was deficient in biotin? And I said, well, I actually want to talk to that person because, you know, there are groups of people that may be, so I've said in the past, people that are really heavy smokers, people that have, you know, an illness and an underlying illness, or people that have lost weight so rapidly that their body has just really become deficient. But I don't believe in taking any hair pills. I think it's a nonsense. I think, look, if people want to take a pill, take a fish oil.
Yeah.
Take a fish oil, because a lot of people are probably not even eating or getting as much from eating fish as they need. Take a fish oil. That's been proven to have a little benefit, you know.
You know, the fish oil sales are going to go through the roof right now. They're going to be like, okay, I can't take anything else, but I'm going to take that one because it's going to grow my hair.
But then it's probably not going to grow there. I love fish oil. My personal thing, you know, mussels, you know, just general health.
It's like cod liver oil in that, like the little capsules.
Yes. So
I know.
I don't believe in just popping vitamins, and I don't. I really believe in trying as much as possible to eat a very balanced diet and a varied diet.
All right. So we've kind of talked about hair health and stuff like that. So I guess the main takeaway from that portion is there's no specific food that is going to go straight to your hair, you know, and give you all the inches you've been waiting for. It's really about, like, holistically looking after your body, and it will then, I guess, reward you with better quality hair because you've given it all of the building blocks it needs.
Absolutely.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit more. You brought out a range of products. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I brought out a range of products, and I like to call them simple products. I fell in love with washing my hair with clay about 2 years ago, and honestly, it's almost a joke, because for a long time I used to see naturals use clay to wash their hair, and I thought that it was all nonsense.
Because
I will tell you why I thought it was all nonsense, because I believe in science. I am a science person. I believe in sulfate. I believe in shampoo, and I still do.
You say you believe in sulfate?
I believe in sulfate.
Yeah, me too. High five.
No, honestly, and I think that it's crazy, this whole no sulfate, sulfate free. And I think on the low key, I look at some people and think, if you just wash your hair with sulfate, your hair will bounce back. And I can see that the problem with your hair is you've not given it a good wash with sulfate.
Yeah, it's build up, isn't it? Especially if you're using like heavy products, you have to have a sulfate base.
Exactly. So you can imagine someone believing all that, what I thought about plates. I just thought, I'm not interested. And then I started to see more and more. And then I thought, look, let me just, I remember the day that I said, I'm going to try. I went to one of my friend's house, and she had a clay, and she went on and on. And I thought, you know, I'm going to give it a try. And I tried it. And it was Rasul that I tried. And I tried it, and I fell in love. I absolutely loved it. And then I started to read about it. Read about the benefits and why it works. I wanted to actually really know, does it actually clean? And that's my thing. Does it actually clean? And so all the research that I read suggested that it does clean. It can be beneficial.
It does or it doesn't? Sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
That it does clean, and it can be beneficial. And the reason why a lot of people with natural hair really like it is that even though it does clean, it doesn't strip completely.
Right.
I started to experiment with different clays, and then and one day I thought, well, why don't we just have a product that has all the different clays, and so all the benefits of the different clays are in one. Mm-hmm. However, I always say this, and I always stress it to anyone that's on my course, and I've said it on my page, when you start using clay, for me, it is not a substitute for not having sulfates in your regimen.
Right.
For me, using a clay to wash your hair is almost like minimizing exposure to a harsh surfactant. So you will use it almost like you will use a moisturizing shampoo.
Okay.
But when you're using a moisturizing shampoo, you will always, well, I will always still advise you to use a heavier duty sulfate-based shampoo at least every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So I am not into using clay exclusively. I know some people do. I don't believe it's great hair practice. Why? Because we know that clay can clean, but we also know that clay doesn't completely strip everything off of your
hair. Yes, it does leave some residue behind.
Exactly. So for that reason, you will always need to use a proper sulfate shampoo, like a clarifying shampoo. So those who use it well and use it properly, they like it, they enjoy it, and that's fine. I recently had to advise someone to go back into the shower and grab for clarifying shampoo because she had not clarified her hair for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then she used the clay on top of that. So you can imagine for 3 months you've had buildup, you've not washed your hair properly. Then you use a clay on top of that, and you know,
You're not gonna
surprise, surprise.
Right, yeah,
you're not gonna get the right result.
I think it's really important that it's like we're talking about these things that I guess I don't want to use the word fad, but are popular. But it's when they're not used correctly that people run into issues.
Absolutely. You know, it's just like people that don't use oils properly.
My favorite subject. I know that we're gonna like maybe have a little bit of a tussle on this one.
No, but honestly, people that don't use oils properly, people that put oil on their scalp every day or every other day, and there are still people that put oil on their scalps.
Yeah.
And there are people that, you know, even put oil on their hair every other day, which you know, it's not, I wonder why. So you know, products are there. So my products are quite simple. At the moment I have two oils and a clay. The olive oil is, I always say, you know, there's no miracle, I don't have any miracle growth product.
There, one more time, Lada, just so people that didn't catch it, that are like running to go and be like, ah, this girl, her hair is long. Let me, it's clay, she said, it's oil, she said. Okay, yeah, forget Ebony. Yeah. What did she do? Okay.
And there are people like that, sadly, but I don't have any miracle growth product. The clay has helped me as a cleanser that I use because it's gentler, but I am also an avid believer in proper sulfates. The oil, I love oils. This is a personal, I love oils. But I love oils within a proper regimen. I don't put oil on my hair every day.
So can you teach us how to use oils effectively? Because I guess I'm more on the, I come more in the anti-oil kind of range because I found that. But for me, most of my clients have some form of scalp issue where oils are like detrimental to them, so I'm like, okay, I use products that contain oils, but using pure oils for me kind of like can cause issues with the subset of clients that I have. I know that they can be good, but for me, I'm like, most people are not using it well, so let me just exclude it from your regimen. But how can people who still enjoy using oils and find them beneficial do it correctly?
So what we have to understand firstly, is when you mentioned your clients, you said most of them have a problem with their scalp. The oils are not meant to be on your scalp.
Oh, no, yeah. Again, that's another fight that I'm fighting.
So the only time that I would put an oil on my scalp is if I'm doing a hot oil treatment because I'm going to wash my hair immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
Or if I'm doing a pre-poo treatment and I'm using maybe a coconut oil or an olive oil, and I know that I want the oil, I want to give the oil the benefit of penetrating my strands, so I'm going to put it on my hair for a long time, but I'm going to wash it off after X hours. Sometimes I will sleep with the oil.
Yeah. And would you be using the clay the next day, or would you be using like a sulfate shampoo?
So no. So if I do a really heavy pre-poo, for example, most of the time I'm going to be using a sulfate. Sometimes it might be a milder sulfate. It doesn't have to be a heavy duty sulfate. But most of the time I'm going to be getting it off my hair and my scalp.
With a cleansing shampoo.
With a cleansing shampoo. But we also have to remember that we're also different.
Definitely.
Different. So I am on the, and my scalp is not dry, but my scalp is not oily. So my scalp can tolerate a hot oil treatment. I can have a hot oil treatment and then wash my hair, even with the clay, and the clay will suck up all the oil from my scalp and it will be fine. This is not to say that this is can be applied to everybody.
Oh, definitely no size fits all.
So just going back to what you asked specifically about how oils can be beneficial. For me, in my experience and my daughter's experience, the being an emollient in itself can really, really, is really, really helpful for me and my daughter, I found, in helping to retain length. Because when I twist my hair, for example, with oil on my hair strand, it is much more effective than just twisting it with something that's really heavy with water.
Okay.
Because when the hair dries, when the water evaporates from my hair, the oil keeps it lubricated. And I guess that really is a function of oil. It keeps it lubricated.
Yeah, I can agree with that. That's fine.
The strands completely apart from each other. And so even little tricks like putting oil at the end of your hair, a lot of people find that when they do two strand twists and it comes to about 3 days old, 4 days old, they're about to take it down, the ends are all tangled together. Putting little oils on the ends of your hair, you will find that it comes apart easily.
And so no, definitely. That's something I can agree with.
And so those benefits, those are the reasons why, for me, I cannot even imagine a regimen without
oil. But then your oil comes with a pipette. So how much should someone be using? So you've got quite a full head of hair. Say like someone who's got like average density, maybe like shoulder length or like, yeah, shoulder length hair. How many drops would they be using on their hair?
Oh my God, even I don't use more than, it depends. So I'm parting my hair, but I'm not using more than 3 drops.
Okay. And that's not like 3 full squeezes of the pipette. It's literally drops of
oil. No. Yeah.
Okay. See, this is the thing where like, I'm like, okay, we align, because people, I guess when they like, you know, you can go to shop and you can buy the big bottles of oil. They will go through that in a month and like, it's like Soul Glow. I always laugh. I'm like, you leave the residue behind.
But
Drops, that's so spare. Do you know what I mean?
No, but it goes a long way.
Yeah.
But we also have to remember that oils are very, very, very different. Even the concentration and the makeup of oils can be very, very different. So some oils are lighter than others, some oils are. So one of my oils, like the Kalila oil, is very rich. It's got
what's the name of it again, sorry?
It's Kalila oil.
Okay.
But it's got broccoli seed oil, which some people call the natural silicone. So that gives you an understanding of how
the mechanisms of it working, yeah.
Exactly. So it's got broccoli seed oil, it's got caffeine oil, and it's got watermelon, which I actually really put to kind of dilute it a little bit. That's how thick it is. So to go through, I emailed someone because she bought a bottle, and then the next month she bought another. And remember, my bottle was 100 ml. So I emailed her saying, how are you using the oil?
Yeah.
And she actually responded. She said she was putting it in her deep conditioner.
I said, right.
What are you doing that for? But that's not the point. Anyway, but yeah, I see the way people use oils, and I'm because I shared a video, and someone said, "Oh my God, I use too much."
Yeah.
Why do you need that? You don't need that much. You don't need that much. You only need a little bit. So I do agree with you that
yeah, that's completely fine, because that's changed my whole perception. Like I knew, because I've met people in your course who purchase your products, and like I always talk them through like how best to use it, and I'm quite confident in the way that you've been telling people. But what I find is that when I speak to new people and I say, yeah, you know, get your oil, I do like the tip over, so like I'll hold the lid to my hand and be like, the residue that's left over, that's what you should use for your whole head. And they're like, no, that's not even anything. I'm like, but what's the function of an oil? It's a barrier and a lubricant.
Absolutely.
And people don't get that. They think it's going to be there for moisture, and I'm like, no, that's not what it's there for.
It's not there for moisture. It is a barrier and a lubricant. And if the oil is a good quality oil, you don't need that much.
Yeah.
You simply don't need that much. There's no reason for you to have that much. So I would say, for example, I have a 100 ml bottle.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to buy another one. I expect it to last minimum 2 months.
Excellent. And is that just personal use? Yeah.
Yes, just personal use, because you're not using it every day either. Why would you be using the oil every day? So there's an issue around so there's an issue about how people use products. And I also kind of really, really, really want to stress this. One thing that I am seeing developing in the hair community, which is really alarming, and the way it's not developing, it's full blown happened, is the no sulfate, no parabens, no silicone.
Listen, bring back silicones.
You need to
bring back silicones. I'm definitely like, ugh.
You need to and for the simple reason that they are effective. Now somebody will say to me, well, but you've got no silicones in your product. I've got no silicones, and I've got no parabens, and I've got no, because I've not had the need for it. But that's different to saying that these things are bad. They are not bad. Silicones are useful. They've been heavily researched. They are safe.
Especially for Afro hair, they're very, all of like the research, the people that I see, the cosmetic scientists, are just like, yeah, silicones are great for Afro hair.
They are.
When I always say this, that a lot of, I feel like Afro hair products are very behind in terms of
course the technology they are
that they use. And so we're in terms of formulation, we're in the dark ages
No, so we're people, we are.
Yeah.
But we are. And then we want to hide it behind all natural.
Oh, you said it, not organic. Me. Because, okay, if I start to talk.
But it's true. We want to hide it behind organic and all natural. Listen, the best deep conditioner I've ever used in my life has silicone. If you're interested in growing your hair to great length, think about including silicone, because that's how effective they are.
Yeah.
They are effective. And they do, anyway, this is a story for another day. But
it is, yeah, it is. We have to do a part two because, yeah, that's a whole topic.
It is a whole topic, but we unfortunately, we are in the minority. I think people really do believe that silicones are bad for their hair. And
yeah, I think good quality silicones are amazing for your hair. It's just that a lot of the products that are pushed that have silicones are just poor quality. They're just not made very well. And so that's what people run into trouble, or they expect it to do something that it's not made to. And again, it comes like you can use certain products, but you have to be able to remove them effectively. So if you're using silicones, you can't have no sulfates. Same way if you're using like heavy oils and butters, you can't remove certain things.
Absolutely.
Like going back to the diet, you can't remove certain food groups and think that everything's going to be okay. So
absolutely spot on. That's just so true. And you know where it can become dangerous? Well, not dangerous, because no one's going to die if their hair's destroyed. But where it's sad is when people avoid silicones in things like heat protectant. Because, you know, and they start using oils
and frying their hair.
And frying their hair. You know, that is where it does become sad. But yesterday I did a live and someone still said, you know, silicone was bad for the hair. And no one will. And you know, let's be honest, that has been peddled by businesses within our community too.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I always say this about the natural hair community especially, is that we will get a hold of something and run with it. And then the market responds. Like, I know me and you have had this conversation before where, like, you know, certain things will be promoted and then it'll be like, okay, is this what they like? Cool. Let me just do it. So, like, you know, the sulfate-free, the paraben-free, coconut oil, shea butter infused, blah, 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 rice water, shebe, all of these things that start off. And I kind of don't know where they come from. I feel like there's, like, operatives in, like, the forums that are just like, oh, what do you guys think about this? And then they, like, magically bring out a product that mirrors it a couple months down the line.
No, but that is how it works.
Yeah.
That is how it works. I have heard, no, because she did it, she said it live.
Oh, yeah, remember this story, yeah.
I've heard someone who runs a really big hair product company in America basically said that they came out with, they were able to respond quickly, is what she said. And they came out with a line, I think it was rice water line, because that's what consumers said they wanted. Had nothing to do with research, had nothing to do with efficacy of the product. It simply mirrored what consumers were saying they were trying and wanted.
Yeah, it's really sad that we're so exploited. And I guess experts are looked down on. Like, we have to have a certain aesthetic to be an expert in this industry. Like, if your hair is not long, full, curly, you kind of don't get any say, because it's just like, oh, but, like, you know, your hair, it's like, please, can we normalize, you know, frizzy edges, hair loss, because it's things that come across, like, they're very, very common. And just because someone speaks on hair doesn't mean they're immune to certain issues.
I really hope, you know, you just made my day by saying we are in the dark ages. Sometimes it feels as if we're in the dark ages with the way that we approach product formulation.
I think
it's right, because it's a weird community sometimes. Sometimes we're so dogmatic about the science says this. And then we want to completely disregard.
It's so strange. Like, I don't understand.
In other areas. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much confusion and, like, discord. And I really wish that, I don't know what the answer is. I guess it's just continue to do things like this and spreading knowledge where we can. Because I used to be inundated with people being like, oh, Ebony said this, but this person's saying that. And I'm like, do you know what? everyone's at their level, and you don't know until you know. So I'm not going to like be online fighting with people. I'm going to be on my corner of the internet speaking about the things I know, and I'm also willing to learn. But none of the things that I've put out, people come against me with science. They're just like anecdotal, like, oh, in my experience, this doesn't work, or yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, okay, but can you like give me anything more?
But you know, it's so funny that you said that, because I'm getting it more and more now. And I actually had to address one yesterday. Somebody's copied and pasted somebody else's post and say, you said this and she said that. The only thing, however, is, and I will give you, I hope you and others will also think about this. The only thing, however, is the person that supposedly said this was actually quoting science.
Yeah.
However, if you have a research background, you know that even in most research, nothing is conclusive.
Yeah, or absolute. Absolute. Yeah.
Thank you. So, you know, I think, and this is my plea to the hair community, please, if you're going to quote research or science, do it properly. So talk about the group that where the sample.
Talk about
the sample, talk about the duration, talk about the any limitations, but don't just put information out there, because the ordinary consumer or the ordinary person is not taking a step back and thinking, well, actually, yes, this research found this, but does it apply to me? Does it apply to my hair? And I'll give you a quick example. So sometimes we quote this peppermint oil, and I have in the past, but people, there's things that you can say on Instagram, there's things that you can elaborate on in your, in your course or so on. So people will quote peppermint oil being able to stimulate growth for forever. But at the same time, you can say that, but you please also say that the research that's been done so far has been on rats. It's been on rats. It's not being on human being. That's not to say that
it can't be transferred.
It can't
be
replicated, but it's still, we don't know. So this person who sent the research yesterday, honestly, I spent over an hour trying to explain to this person why misting their hair is not going to destroy their hair. You know, so I just want us to be a little bit more cautious and responsible in how we disseminate even science-based research.
Definitely.
Because we know science is not conclusive. It does sometimes apply to certain groups.
Yeah.
And you cannot
extrapolate. Another example.
Can I just finish on saying, you cannot
Sorry.
You cannot say, because a research found X, it means that Z is, you shouldn't do Z. You cannot extrapolate that. And I know this because I work in a research background. So please, let's share research. It's great, but let's do it responsibly.
Yeah, like a couple of weeks ago, I was gonna say there was a study, maybe months now, who knows how long lockdown has been, about the black women colouring their hair and being more prone, I think it's to breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, on the headline of that study made it seem like, oh, if you colour your hair, you're gonna get breast cancer. But I'm like, literally, it was just like a longitudinal study where they had seen and, you know, they'd found that black women had, but there was no actual research or any looking into the causes behind it. So all they tested was two factors, but they hadn't seen if there was actually causation between them.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, something completely different. Another factor that wasn't accounted for could have been the reason why these women had breast cancer. But people were just like, oh my God, hair colours. And I'm like, no, please look at things properly. Like,
no, you're
dangerous
right.
When you say things just like that for like clicks and retweets.
You're absolutely right. And in fact, I may have made a mistake of actually posting that. And I did after I thought had done my due diligence in actually trying to, I thought the source of information was actually, and it was, I believe it was The Guardian. And I thought the source of information would be, and I went into to try to read the research myself. But you're absolutely right. Before I can even now share pieces of research, it would be so nuanced.
Yeah, and you have to just really just go into it properly.
Properly. And if I'm not, and that's why I would maybe only do that within the group, because I have time to do that. I don't think I will be doing it on an Instagram post or Instagram, because I just think there is so much room for scaremongering.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a part of that, because quite frankly, it's not that serious. It's not that deep. Mm. And grow your hair by just, you know, acquiring certain skills and being diligent and consistent with applying those skills. It's not that serious. And we are slowly moving into that fear-mongering mode and mindset.
Yeah.
But your point is absolutely well made. I will completely be honest, being sucked into that in the past. But
no, all of us have. Like, I know I've seen studies and been like, okay, well, this says this, or come to refute people. But I'm like, actually, the thing I get most from reading journals and things like that is that more research needs to be done.
That is it. I'm like, that no one research is conclusive. And this is what I keep saying, and I still said it yesterday, that hair is just as much about the science, the art, and what you can observe. So the science tells us certain amazing things, but science is never static. It keeps changing.
It
keeps moving. There's the art of it, you know, things like, it's not science that's telling us how to twist our hair, you know. Science didn't tell us about locking and you know, things like that. And then there's what you can observe, just like a nutrition, a seemingly balanced diet can throw somebody else's digestive system into chaos if it has too many fruits and fructose that they can't break down because there's something in their own digestive system. That's the same way as in you observe how your hair reacts to certain things and how it behaves under certain situations. So there's no one answer that applies to everyone. And so let's not try and bamboozle people with, oh my God, the science says that, because exactly as you said, science, what you learn the most from science is it's not conclusive. More needs to be done. And it is applicable sometimes. And unfortunately, there's still a bias in the groups of science or the
group. Let's not even get into that one today.
The group of hair that is still being researched the most. And unfortunately, it's still not Afrotextured hair. So we have to kind of take everything
with a pinch of salt
and learn from it, but not kind of try and bamboozle anybody or try and scare people with new findings.
Yeah. Oh, this has been amazing talking to you. So can you just quickly, as we wrap up, give people where they can find you? You know, you talked about your hair course, who's it aimed at, when's the next one starting, just so they can make sure that they're linking up with you afterwards.
Okay, thank you. So I can be reached on Instagram, Uri by Titi. My website is urilifestyle.com. I have a hair course. Next one's not starting until July. That's it.
Cool. Excellent. Any final remarks for the people before you go?
Final remarks for the people is that nobody's going to rescue your hair. No one is coming to rescue your hair. There are loads of experts that can help and support you, but you are your hair's own hero. You're the only person that your hair's been waiting for, so you have to take that step.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much. So did I.